Hello, and welcome to another episode of In Beta. My name is Ben Ellis. In this episode, I'm talking to Carmen Caiero from the Polytechnic Institute of Setúbal in Portugal about her introduction of a course trying to develop narrative reasoning skills in physiotherapy students, particularly using art and literature and reflection to really try and develop the skills of empathy and understanding, being able to really hear, interpret and act upon the patient's story as part of clinical reasoning. This is an episode, a conversation I had quite a while ago now, so first I just want to say apologies to Carmen for the time it's taken to get this episode out. This is actually the first of three episodes which I've been sitting on for a little bit of time, but hopefully I'm going to get them all out over the next short while. So massive thanks to Carmen. I think it's a really fascinating discussion, and I really hope that you all enjoy it. While I've got you here, just a reminder that the In Beta Unconference Experiments in Physiotherapy Education is still open to registration. It's free. It's on the 14th and 15th of May in Lausanne in Switzerland. So that's straight after WCPT has finished. We've got what looks a really interesting, diverse group of people attending. And if you want to come along and join the conversation with those people, then please head to inbeta.uwc.ac.za/unconference and you can find more information and register there. But without further ado, after what has been, for me and Carmen, a long wait to get this out, here's the conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Carmen. Do you want to just introduce yourself first?
Hi, Ben. Yes, my name is Carmen, as you've said, and I'm a lecturer in physiotherapy at the Health School of the Setúbal Polytechnic Institute in Portugal. Thank you very much for your invitation, and let me congratulate you both, you and Michael, for such an interesting and amazing project.
Thank you. Thanks for being part of it.
Thank you.
Okay, great. So I wonder whether we could sort of just start off by getting a bit of an idea about where this idea came from. So what motivated the implementation of this element of your course? So it's kind of two modules, isn't it, which are looking at narrative reasoning, one that happens before placement and one after. Could you just give us a bit of a sort of background as to where that idea came from and why this was something you chose to implement?
Yeah, our motivations for this project, well, first of all, I'd like to emphasize the work theme involved in this project. The narrative reasoning course is integrated in the undergraduate physiotherapy course at the Health School of Setúbal Polytechnic Institute here in Portugal. So the project requires the important collaboration of my colleagues from the physiotherapy department. Especially, I'd like to emphasize the work from two colleagues, Eduardo Cruz and Carla Pereira, with whom I've been working in the narrative reasoning course. We've planned the course, implemented it, and we've also done some research focused on exploring the students' perceptions regarding the contribution of the course for the development of their clinical reasoning. But about our motivations, well, firstly, the study focused on Portuguese undergraduate physiotherapy students' understandings on clinical reasoning carried out by Cruz, Moore and Cross in 2012 called our attention to the dominance of the biomedical aspects in the undergraduate Portuguese physiotherapy curricula. And in fact, this was consistent with previous research carried out in other countries. So globally, research has emphasized that key clinical reasoning dimensions, such as reflective thinking or dialectical thinking, tend to be underdeveloped, disconnected, or absent in the conceptions of and reflections on clinical reasoning in the undergraduate physiotherapy curricula. Indeed, students and novices seem to be therapist-centered and focused on the procedural aspects of clinical reasoning. Additionally, research worldwide has emphasized that physiotherapy curricula's focus on apathetic deductive reasoning and biomedical aspects of care seem to be responsible for students' and novices' difficulties in engaging in narrative forms of reasoning, collaborative models of practice, and patient-centered care. So narrative reasoning, defined as the capability of therapists to apprehend and understand patients' illness experiences and meaning perspectives, has been presented as a key attribute in a patient-centered model of practice. It helps practitioners to be more capable of recognizing, interpreting, and being moved to action by the individual stories of illness. And this impacts their approach to reasoning and practice, as well as the outcomes of that practice. So we started looking for educational strategies that could help us promoting our students' development of narrative reasoning capabilities and patient-centered care. And we realized that the use of arts, literature, and reflective writing was becoming increasingly popular in health professionals' education, especially in postgraduate medical courses. You have some examples worldwide in the area of medicine, such as the Narrative Medicine Master's Program at the Columbia University, or the Medical Humanities MSc at King's College. So these educational strategies have been used to promote health students and health professionals' development of skills to observe, interpret, and respond empathetically to patients' stories. So the motivations for the development of the narrative reasoning course came from not only our experiences as physiotherapists and lecturers, but also and mainly from previous research from several areas such as physiotherapy, lighthouse professions, and medicine, carried out nationally and internationally. Actually, you can find some resources in the preparation document for this session.
Yes, thank you for adding those. Can I ask a question at this point? So, because it seems really clear to me that there was a definite gap identified by the research that's been done, that this isn't a focus of kind of education, and it's something that students find difficult. Was there any kind of drive from clinical practice? So was this something that educators were kind of coming to you at all and saying that students seemed to find difficult? Or was that not part of this kind of drive that pushed for the change at all?
Actually, we also... I've mentioned the study about the... Portuguese students' understandings on clinical reasoning that was carried out in 2012. And actually, there was another study carried out with physiotherapists. And the kind of difficulties were quite similar between the students and the physiotherapists. Difficulties in engaging in narrative forms of reasoning were also found in physiotherapists working with patients in clinical settings. So I think that this is something that is difficult in the Portuguese context, not only for students, but also for physiotherapists working in practical settings, mainly because we have a quite strong biomedical context. There is actually changing. Nowadays, it has been changing, but actually, we have very strong biomedical roots, so it's difficult to change our models of practice. So this is something that it's challenging, not only for students, but also for professionals in the clinical settings.
Great, thanks. Okay, is this a good point to move on to kind of, so like what the course looks like and the kind of implementation of it? So how does it work in practice?
Yeah, I think that in order to provide you with some context, it's important to say that our physiotherapy undergraduate program is a 4-year degree program, which follows a case-based learning curriculum design. The graduate profile follows the core recommendations of the WCPT, and clinical education outside the academic setting constitutes about 25% of the total educational program and requires supervised clinical practice throughout the program. So the narrative reasoning course has been implemented in the 3rd-year curriculum as a way to facilitate the development of students' narrative reasoning capabilities and to help students learning how to co-create knowledge from their interactions with individual patients. The course has been organized in 2 modules, separated by a 12-week period of supervised clinical education. And each module consists of a weekly 2-hour tutorial session over a period of 10 weeks. And each tutorial session involves a group with a maximum of 10 students and is facilitated by a tutor. So you can have some idea, an idea about this. The central theme of the first module is the collaborative therapeutic relationship. And throughout the module, students are presented with scientific papers, excerpts of patients' illness narratives, and several different artifacts to critically analyze and challenge their therapeutic relationship with their patients. For example, we discussed the paper entitled Clinical Reasoning Strategies in Physiotherapy by Edwards and colleagues. Mm-hmm. We also analyzed a chapter from Irving Yalom's book, When Nietzsche Wept, or we discussed the film One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest by Milos Forman. Additionally, reflective writing is also introduced to promote an active dialogue about students' clinical experiences from the perspectives of both themselves and patients. The central theme of the second module is illness narratives and patient-centered practice, and in this module, students are asked to present their own excerpts of patients' narratives developed in clinical education period. It's important to say here that we are not looking for factual, objective sentences about the patient's context and details of the clinical condition. Instead, students are requested to capture how patients make sense of their clinical condition. Here we also use artifacts such as The Tragedy by Pablo Picasso, or The Doctor by Sir Luke Fields, or The Metamorphosis by Kafka. And through these strategies, through these educational strategies, students are encouraged to reflect in any inconsistencies between their professional identities, their reasoning approach, and their clinical actions, and are invited to challenge and expand their existing perspectives. So in order to do so, the tutor follows the principles of transformative learning and uses a tutorial question guide designed to generate dilemmas and promote student self-examination of their role in practice. The group is encouraged to explore the individual and collective learning, the commonalities and differences among clinical experiences, and the relevance of critical reflection to practice, as well as to outline plans of action. Maybe it's also important to say that in both modules, the assessment is based on written assignments. In the first module, students are requested to establish their position on the collaborative model of practice in patients management through an argumentative essay. And in the second module, students are required to present a patient's narrative that is usually focused on a patient that they had followed in the clinical setting. So basically, I think that's the main information or the main ideas about the narrative reasoning course.
Yeah, that's great. That's really clear. So this is taking place in, as you said, the third year of a 4-year program. Yes.
Yeah.
So have the students been out on placement presumably before this? So they have had some experience of kind of practice before they start doing the first of the two more academic parts of that program.
Yes, they had. They have experience in clinical placements first year.
Mm-hmm.
They have 3 weeks of clinical education.
Mm-hmm.
On a daily basis throughout 3 weeks. And they also have more 4 weeks in the second year. And then they have 12 weeks in the third. And they have one semester and more 6 weeks in the fourth year. So have a quite long period they have several periods of clinical education throughout the course, and they have, well, at least before the first module of this course, they have 2 periods of clinical education, one in the first year and another one in the second year.
Yeah.
I think the most important is that period between the first module and the second module, because we are challenging them to think about some topics and some ideas, and then when they go to the clinical settings, they will be confronted with these topics and these thoughts, and this will, well actually they reflect on the previous discussions that they had in the first module, and then when they come for the second module, are you there?
Sorry, yes.
Oh,
carry
sorry.
On. Sorry.
when they come to the second module, they use that they're experiencing the clinical period of that period of 12 weeks to reflect on, and they spend a lot of time analyzing the patient's narratives that they had followed before in that period of 12 weeks. So there is a very important connection between the narrative reasoning course and the periods of clinical education.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that I really like about how it's kind of organized, is that you've really got that sort of ability to introduce ideas and to kind of challenge, and then the students, as you say, have to go out and be confronted by that. And so in terms of embedding it and really getting them to see the clinical application of that and it trying to change their practice, I think it works really nicely. And I think I kind of wondered whether, I guess we might come on to thinking about how this might be implemented elsewhere. It sounds like what you're saying is actually trying to, if you're going to do this, having some sort of ability to begin talking about this idea before placement, before some sort of placement experience, that the students can then reflect through that and come back, is a sort of integral part of it. That really needs to be there for it to work. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's quite important to make this connection with clinical practice, and to actually, I think this motivates students because they can find a connection between these and clinical practice. Because sometimes we are talking about some, imagine, for example, we discussed the Metamorphosis by Kafka, which, well, it's not related. You cannot relate it directly to clinical practice because it's a story about, well, it's not clinical practice.
No.
And actually, there is a risk that they cannot find that relationship between what we are discussing and clinical practice. And I think that if this happens, we'll not achieve the learning outcomes, because learning outcomes are very related to the application of these ideas to the clinical settings. So it's very important to, you know, when we are discussing the Metamorphosis, for example, we are asking questions about how can they relate these to their clinical practice, and what have they learned from this book that may help them, when they go to clinical practice. So the link between what we are discussing in the tutorial session and what they are going to do in clinical practice, or what they have done before in clinical practice, it's very important.
Yeah, that's great. And that comes on to a question that Anestis has just asked in the comments. So kind of could you give some other examples? So you're clearly asking some questions, you know, regarding, OK, so from what we've been watching or we've been reading, what are the links that the students can see and that they can begin to make between that and their clinical practice? Can you give us a sense of any of the other sort of questions? Do you sort of launch straight into that, or do you tend to ask questions that are reflecting on the actual artifact itself first? How does that sort of structure work within the tutorial?
Well, the structure is very important for the tutors to help students in analyzing and discussing the artifacts that we've selected. For example, besides the questions designed to ask them to relate the content of the discussion to clinical practice, sometimes we ask questions about the artifact itself. For example, one of the movies that we discuss is that one from Milos Forman that I've mentioned, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And we use that film to discuss the topic therapeutic relationship and professional power. So one of the things in that film is a nurse that is conducting a group session with a group of patients. And we ask them to try to imagine how their patients were feeling in that group session. Mm. You know, experience how is to be the nurse or the health professional that is moderating the group, and to be in the place of the patients. How would they feel if they were their patients? And they can identify feelings of shame, for example, fear in that group. So we ask them to try to experience that episode as if they were patients, for example. Mm-hmm. This is one of the examples. Or another example could be when you look at this group session, and if you try to relate this with the concepts that we've discussed before about the models of therapeutic relationship, in what model do you think that this therapeutic relationship could be classified? It's not classified, but, you know, what kind of relationship, therapeutic relationship, do you see in these examples? So it's a way to, you know, put some theoretical concepts into practice. Because previously we've discussed the models of therapeutic relationship, so they are familiar with paternalism, with this kind of notions, and then they try to apply these notions in the analysis of the film.
That's great. Thanks. That's really clear. I'm going to give Anestis just the opportunity to come in there, because I know that this is something that you've been beginning to try a bit of on your course as well, Anestis. So did you have any kind of particular experiences around that you wanted to reflect on too?
So thank you for the great topic that you're presenting today, Carmen. I have used movies in particular as part of my neurological physiotherapy course. Again, I'm trying to have the objectives very to keep the objectives very specific for, you know, what is the expectation from that session. I'm actually watching the movie with the students in class, and then we have a tutorial that follows that. When you have a movie, do you watch it in class, or you get them to watch it in their own time, and then they come to class and you discuss it?
No, actually, they watch the movies or read the books by themselves at home, and then we use the tutorial session and the time of the tutorial session just for the discussion. We don't watch the movies or read the books with them. And actually, I think this works well, because in our and this may be related to our curriculum design, because they are used to prepare sessions, tutorial sessions, because we use case-based learning. So this is something that is normal. They are familiar with the idea that they need to do some work before having any tutorial sessions. So it works quite well, and usually they prepare sessions very well, and when they are motivated, well, they do a very good preparation before the session.
Great, yes, absolutely. Just that I only have actually one session during the whole term, or in my course, where I saw a movie. And actually, I take the opportunity and book the cinema, the movie theater that is part of the university. So then I invite students to bring chips or popcorn, and then we have it like more like a relaxed session. On another thing is, as a final, after the tutorial, or towards the end of the tutorial, do the student need to produce something, either prepare a like a short presentation with some key concepts or answers, and then share it with the rest of the group, or is there a discussion, or it's more like it just stays on group discussion and that's all, or perhaps they need to write something and submit it. So what is the end product of the tutorial?
Mm-hmm. Well, for example, in the first module, in each session, there is a student that is responsible for producing a kind of report about the main topics that were discussed in that session, and they will read, that student will read his or her report in the next tutorial session. But the main product of this first module is the written assignment. Well, they produce an argumentative essay about argument about the collaborative therapeutic model of practice and collaborative therapeutic relationships, and they support a thesis that is provided, and they have to present some arguments to support or against the thesis. And that's the main product, because we are trying to promote, if you think about the learning outcomes, we're trying to promote mainly the reflection about these topics and the capacity to think critically about these topics. So the assessment is focused on their capacity to present arguments that may support patient-centric practice or collaborative models of practice, or different ways of establish collaboration with patients. And that's the main product of the first module. Then in the second module, the first product is a narrative, a illness narrative. An illness narrative about one patient that they are required to select from their clinical from their clinical period between the first and the second module. So actually it's a real patient with whom they've worked before. They spend the second module, not only analyzing and discussing the artifacts, but actually they bring excerpts from their illness narratives to present to the group and to discuss with the group. Then they will use the feedback from the group, questions from their colleagues, and will reflect again on these, and then they submit a final product. There is an illness narrative that actually is developed throughout the second module. So basically, that's the main projects of each one of the modules.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's great to see that you have connected it so much with clinical practice and real-life application. I have difficulties doing that because I'm incorporating movies in the second and third year, and students have very limited experience or interactions with real patients. So, but I can definitely see the value of connecting with real life, with real cases, with real patients.
Yeah, because when you don't establish this connection, I think that students may not attribute value to the strategy, because they will attribute more value to, clinical practice sessions, like imagine practice on muscle tests, for example, or posture analysis and these kind of things that can find any relationship with clinical practice. So it's important to establish this connection. And actually, we've done some experiments with our first year students, and we realized that it's too soon for them, because they have the clinical placements in the end of the year. It's the final period of that first year. And if we introduce this kind of strategies before, it's too soon. They cannot relate this to clinical practice, so they cannot find the value of the strategy because they're not linking it to. So it's a movie or it's a book. It's interesting, but it's not that important, such as an anatomy class, you know, because they cannot find the relationship. It's too soon for them.
Mm-hmm. And do you kind of introduce the concept of narrative reasoning earlier? You know, so is that something that's kind of there in the background, but not particularly explicitly kind of gone into in the same depth until you get to the module in the third year? Or is this, does this come to the students as a relatively new concept at that point, do you think?
Yeah, they are familiar with the concept of illness narrative since the first year, but actually we introduce it in more depth just in the third year. Mm-hmm. We prepare a session in the end of the first module to talk to them about illness narratives and what kind of information is important to pay attention in the clinical placement, so they can collect some material to produce the illness narrative in the second module. But actually, we just discuss the concept of illness narratives and read some literature about it in the first tutorial sessions in the second module. So that's the moment when we discuss what is an illness narrative, what kind of structure they can use to write an illness narrative, for example.
Great, thank you. So you started to mention there about kind of students, you know, seeing the importance of it and obviously having to prioritise the work that they are doing amongst everything else. So this sounded like a good point to move on to kind of, I guess, a couple of questions. What were the challenges faced by the lecturers in implementing it? And then maybe coming on to kind of what are the students' perceptions of it and kind of how does that perception change across their time actually doing the course?
Mm-hmm. Well, as physiotherapists, our previous training was quite biomedical focused. Nevertheless, the three of us used qualitative approaches in our PhD studies, which was quite important to develop sensitivity to the topic of narratives. So I believe that one of the major challenges is to move our focus towards a really biopsychosocial approach and to integrate the course into the current undergraduate physiotherapy curriculum. And in order to help us implementing the narrative reasoning course, we also attended postgraduate education in narrative medicine in the Faculty of Letters at the University of Lisbon. And this training was very important because we became able to transfer knowledge from different areas such as literature or ethics or philosophy and integrate it in the undergraduate physiotherapy curriculum. This was quite important to develop our capabilities to use arts, to use literature and reflective writing as educational strategies. But besides this, the approach itself, it's quite challenging because we are using the transformative learning theory as a framework to integrate these educational strategies. So this means that we are not using didactic approaches. Instead, we're trying to promote and manage small group discussions focused on students' critical analysis of their assumptions regarding clinical practice. We're trying to generate dilemmas and promote students' self-examination of their role in practice. And we're also trying to illuminate unreflected assumptions or hidden professional authority adopted by the students when they had interacted with their patients. So this is quite challenging for both the tutors and the students. But as I've said before, we use a tutorial question guide and the educational strategies are carefully selected in order to help us achieving learning outcomes. But nevertheless, this requires the tutors to be quite flexible, reflective, and able to deal with the unpredictable and surprising nature of these, mm-hmm. of these discussions. So it's very challenging, but at the same time, it's a very enriching experience for both, for us as lecturers and also for students, because they also realize that the kind of discussion that they are required to have in these sessions is a little bit different from the discussions they have when they are discussing, for example, a clinical case. So it's challenging for all of us. But in the end of the day, I think that the feedback is quite positive, not only from us as lecturers, but also from the students.
Yeah, no, I can totally imagine that it is, and as you say, it's a transformative educational model for the students, but it does allow that transformation to happen from your perspective too, doesn't it? You know, I'm guessing that each time that you kind of run this module, something changes. You're going to be exposed to something different, and so, you know, it's not really a teaching technique that can become as sort of stale, I guess, or that would certainly be the sort of hope with it.
Yes, it's very interesting because I can give you an example. One of the films that we analyze is The Sixth Sense, mm-hmm. by Night Shyamalan, I think, mm-hmm. is his name. So it's very interesting because I've already watched this movie several times, each time I see the movie, I see something different, and each time I discuss it with students, something different comes up in the discussion. And yet, actually, we're discussing the same topics. We are discussing, when you use this film, we are discussing the different types of collaboration that you can develop with your patients. And actually, although we are discussing the same things, different topics came out of the discussion. And actually, we realized that as tutors, we also are changing in this process. So this is quite interesting too for us as lecturers.
And so it's the three of you who sort of teach on it, is it? The sort of three people who, you know, were involved in the actual sort of initial setup of it, yeah?
We are the core team in this project, although we have had some collaborations from colleagues that they collaborate in one or two academic years, but we are the three members of the team that have developed the project since the beginning, and also have done some research.
Yeah, and do you think it would be kind of more challenging to implement it if you were someone who was working in a kind of department where you were maybe the only person who had that real interest in the kind of more qualitative methodology and trying to bring people across to this way of teaching? You know, it kind of sounds like you all had a sort of shared interest, and so, you know, you were kind of finding out how to go about teaching this, and so there's a kind of process of discovery, and your teaching practice has changed through this, which sounds absolutely fantastic. I'm just thinking in terms of the practicalities of maybe someone listening who's thinking, could I take an element of this and implement it elsewhere, but I'm going to have to try and convince, you know, maybe another two or three people that they could run this. Do you have any thoughts as to how that would work?
Yeah, as I've told you in the beginning, in order to implement this kind of projects, I think that to have a strong team is very important, and we all share this interest on narrative reasoning and patient-centered care, and are all familiar with qualitative research, which makes everything easier, I think. But I think that the interest in this topic has increased actually over the last years, and there are lots of authors writing about this and thinking about this. So I think that the interest in this topic It's going to increase, actually. And I hope that that I can find that more and more physiotherapists are using it in their curricula. So maybe this session will help me and help us discovering that there are more people doing it. Because even if you don't have anyone in your faculty working in this area, if you establish contact with someone working in another faculty, actually it could be very helpful. And also we have our example that we are not using this in our polytechnic, and we attended some and we did some training in the University of Lisbon with people from literature, from medicine, from philosophy, and this was quite important for us because, you know, you can transfer knowledge from other areas to your own area, and I think this is quite enriching.
Yeah, absolutely, and it just sounds like such a kind of nice way to be improving your skills at the same time as you're improving your teaching, and this is something that obviously you'd put a lot of work into working up the first time. How has it changed sort of over time since then? Has the modular content stayed relatively similar, or is it something that you are still sort of making iterations to and altering year on year?
Yes, it has changed since the beginning. We started in 2009, and since then we have done several improvements. Besides the scientific papers, we started using reflective writing. Then we added movies, literature, and then some paintings and photographs. And throughout these years, we've introduced new material and also replaced other that were not that useful as we thought in the beginning. So we've kept reflecting on our approach, assessing students, and also assessing the course from a pedagogical perspective, which is also quite important. And now we are now working with a Portuguese actor in order to introduce simulated patients in the next few months. So we want to explore how students integrate these capabilities in simulated clinical interactions. Because until now, we've done some research that is focused on students' perceptions regarding the contribution of the course for the development of their capabilities, but we're not assessing their capabilities directly with when they are interacting with their patients. This is, methodologically speaking, this is quite challenging. So we decided to take this first step. There is, okay, let's put students interacting with an actor that will be previously trained to do that simulations, and see how they can integrate these capabilities in this simulated interaction. So we actually were quite excited about this, so hope to have more information in the next few months, because it's actually in early stages now.
Yeah, that sounds great. So is that something that you use elsewhere on the program, or will that be the first sort of place that you're going to use simulated patients?
It's going to be the first time. We in the second year, sometimes we in one specific curricular unit we carry out some simulations, but with just the students. So one student simulates their he or she is a patient, and we provide the student with specific information that they need to memorize in order to do the simulation, and the other student is the physiotherapist in that simulation. Mm-hmm. But here is the first time that we are using, or we are collaborating with someone that is not a student in physiotherapy. Well, it's not a patient, but it's an actor, and is someone that is able to prepare a simulation that is close to or closer to the reality. So we're planning to provide this actor with some of our illness narratives that have been developed until now, and the actor will work from these illness narratives. So he will work from real stories, and the aim is to have an interaction that could be, well, very close to the real scenario.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, we've got some experience of doing this, and we're kind of increasing the use of all types of simulation. So we use a professional actor for some parts of it, and then other times it might be us as kind of teaching staff who play that role, and which can work really well. But I think having that actor and some of the actors who come and work with those kind of illness scripts, they do such a fantastic job that it simulates that real experience. But in a relatively short time, I've been really surprised at how sort of deep the experience can actually go, because you can kind of narrow it right down to the teaching point. Whereas on placement, you're kind of waiting for that learning moment to occur. You can sort of structure the simulation around it so that you get to that sort of nub and that either that conflict that you're trying to bring up or the kind of challenge to the student's thinking. What seems like quite a tricky thing to implement and run, to get through the whole cohort, that kind of thing, actually, I'd say in our experience, you can definitely get there. And so it sounds like that's a really interesting place for you to be sort of taking it next, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're very excited about this. So hope to have news in the next few months about this.
Brilliant. So there's a question from Anestis, which is he's just popped in the chat bar there, which is what are the main themes that you address in the course? And so if you could just give us a sense of the kind of key ones and a bit of the logic behind how the sequence of those goes. I don't know whether that's something that you could just give us a bit of an overview of.
Mm-hmm. Well, the themes, well, in the first module, the main theme is the collaborative therapeutic relationship, as I've said before, and mm-hmm. we have some sub-themes that we explore throughout the tutorial sessions. For example, we start a discussion discussing the instrumental and communicative approaches to reasoning and practice, for example. So we discussed apathetic deductive reasoning and narrative reasoning, collaborative reasoning, so different approaches to clinical reasoning. Another topic is we try to move this theme, instrumental communicative approaches to clinical reasoning and practice, to the Portuguese context, and we discuss some one specific paper from that is related to the Portuguese context. And we discussed, for example, the models of therapeutic relationship, therapeutic relationship and professional power. We take some time discussing issues about professional power and how we deal with professional power in the context of therapeutic relationships. We also discuss collaborative reasoning and decision making, or the concept of patient-centered practice. So these are some of the topics we discuss. Imagine some themes in the second module related to narratives, for example, mm-hmm. narrative and empathy, illness as metaphors, paternalism and human dignity. Well, these are some of the topics. I think that it could be useful. One of the resources that we've introduced in the preparation document are related to the two papers that we've published on this, on the narrative reasoning course. And in one of the papers, which is the last one, we have a table with all of the themes that are discussed in each week of each module and the specific strategy that we are using, the movie or the book or the scientific paper. So if anyone is interested in having some more specific idea about the themes and the strategies, maybe that article could be useful.
I think that's absolutely perfect. Yeah, and thanks for putting those links in there, because they're really interesting to read anyway. And as you say, it kind of gives that bit more depth and how each of the particular approaches links in with the theme that you're trying to cover. That's great. Okay, I'm conscious of the time, it's a fascinating conversation. I've still got loads of questions here, so I'm trying to pick which of the questions should we go for. I'm going to go for the one that was me being a bit of a devil's advocate, I was just wondering if I challenged you and said, okay, so this all sounds great, and I really like the idea of using the art and the literature, but what is the key kind of additional benefit? What's the added value that those things bring over spending more time kind of going and seeing things from a patient scenario, a patient illness script perspective? So if you're going to make the case for the kind of art and literature component being absolutely integral, what would your key argument be there?
Well, I think the key argument is that there are some capabilities that are quite important for clinical practice, such as your capability to observe, to interpret, to be empathic, that you can develop. It's very difficult to develop these capabilities in using didactic approaches or just discussing the clinical cases themselves. Because even when we are discussing clinical cases, and we use this strategy in other curricular units in our course, students tend to focus on the clinical aspects, such as the signs and symptoms of the disease, or the kind of functional aspects. They tend to focus on the disability. So when you use this kind of approach, you create space for discussion. You challenge students to reflect on their assumptions, and the kind of questions you can ask, because it's completely different. For example, when you present students with the painting Tragedy by Pablo Picasso, you ask them what are you seeing in this painting. Can you imagine what the painter was thinking when he did this painting? Can you imagine how is to be that person in the painting? So you are asking different kinds of questions that, well, it's difficult to promote this discussion using other educational strategies. I think that's the key aspect of using these strategies, the kind of questions and discussions you can have with students.
I'm sold. 100%. Okay, great. So I guess the kind of other key thing that we like to try and get to is if someone was listening to this and thinking about how could they implement like a component of this? So kind of what would you say is the most easily transferable kind of element. If someone was wasn't in the position to introduce a whole new module, but just wanted to kind of take an aspect of the approach that you've been describing and kind of implement that into an existing part of the curriculum, would you have any tips on where's a good place to start, or a kind of a way to try and do that on a small scale that could then be built up?
Well, maybe the first module on collaborative tutor-pupil relationship, because, well, if students have previous experience with patients, they can easily relate these topics with their experience. And there are some of the artifacts that could be easily related to their clinical practice, such as that film that I've mentioned before, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, or The Sixth Sense, for example. But also, and I think this is quite important, it's very useful for students if you provide them before with some information on the topic. For example, we use that paper by Edwards and colleagues on clinical reasoning strategies in physical therapy, mm-hmm. which provides them with a framework to analyze the artifacts. So this is also very, very important. Or, for example, we discuss another scientific paper by Edwards, there is what is collaborative reasoning, or we discuss the collaborative decision making in one of the books related to clinical reasoning. So it's very important to establish this connection and provide students with some information that can help them to look at the artifacts. So just use the artifacts themselves could be difficult if you do not provide students with a framework before doing that analysis.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really helpful way to try and think about it. Fantastic, thank you. Okay, were there any kind of particular aspects of the program that you wanted to talk about that we haven't done, or anything that we've sort of missed in that conversation, do you feel?
Well, I think that's important to analyze the students' perceptions about the contribution of the course, and actually those papers that I've introduced in the preparation document analyze this. We've done some research. We've carried out IPA studies on students' perceptions about both the contribution of the core and the contribution of the educational strategies. And this could be, don't know if we have time to discuss it now, but if we don't, I think that's, well, there is some information, sorry, in those two papers that could be useful for everyone that's thinking on implementing these kind of approaches.
Yeah, no, I think we have time. Yes, sorry, that was me not getting to those questions. So yeah, so that I think that would be really interesting though to kind of just get a bit of detail from the results of that work. So looking at what the students' perceptions were, and as you say, the kind of what the take home messages are from those in terms of anyone trying to thinking about trying to implement this. So yeah, if you wanted to give us a bit of detail on that would be great.
Yeah. Okay. So we carry out, as I've said, an IPA study with 18 volunteer final year students, and they were randomly assigned to participate in three focus groups. So that was our method for data collection. And in this first study, students recognized the contribution of the course in developing competences to facilitate patient-centered practice. And it's interesting because the findings encompass a notion of change. There is perceived by students at three different levels. They perceive that their clinical practice has changed. They have acquired and developed new competences that help them to change their clinical actions and be more effective with their patients. They also perceive that their reasoning approach has changed. The reasoning focus has shifted from a traditional clinician-centered to a patient-centered approach. And they also perceive that their professional identity was challenged. They acquired a new perspective of how they could act and interact with the healthcare system, with the profession, and with their patients. We also explored the students' perspectives about the contribution of the educational strategies, specifically, in facilitating narrative reasoning capabilities. And again, we also used focus groups meetings with semi-structured interview schedules. And in this second study, students considered that the use of these educational strategies helped them to become more sensitive to the patient's experiences, enabled to understand and communicate with patients and to analyze the roles of each person in the therapeutic relationship. Also interesting is that they faced dilemmas due to the emergence of inconsistencies between what they were thinking and what they had done in clinical placements, mm-hmm. and perceived to be more aware of the assumptions behind their personal and professional values. I have some excerpts from the focus groups. Maybe I can read a couple of them.
Yes, please.
To provide you with some examples.
Yeah.
So one student said, "Previously, we had learned about the biopsychosocial model of practice, and we believe that we were approaching our patients according to its principles, of course. But then when we analyzed our approach to patients, we realized that we were completely focused on the biomedical model. And this course made us realize that although we knew that the biopsychosocial model was the most adequate, we weren't using the most adequate approach to our patients. We thought we were doing so, but then we became aware that, in fact, we were a bit behind." So they also emphasize the importance of reflection to illuminate new practices and help them become more aware of their learning process. And I have another excerpt that is quite interesting. One student said, "The ability to critically analyze ourselves, to reflect and change, we think this process should continue. We were encouraged to keep this attitude, keep changing. This capacity to challenge ourselves was something that was deeply developed throughout the whole, and I believe it will continue from now on." So I think these studies provide some indications about the inclusion of such a course in the design of learning opportunities to facilitate narrative reasoning competence and collaborative models of practice. And also, the incorporation of these educational strategies in a transformative learning framework seem to offer useful ways of developing a wide range of professional skills related to aspects of narrative reasoning capabilities and patient-centered practice. But it's important also to say that, and for someone that is considering to implement a similar approach, it's important to say that with some groups, we found some resistance in the beginning of the course, because although they are familiar with group discussions, as we are using case-based learning, this course requires them to move the focus towards themselves and their interactions with patients. So this is, as I've told you before, this is quite challenging because it requires students to reflect about themselves and about the way they relate to their patient, with their patients, and the way they approach their patients in clinical settings, rather than just being focused on the clinical condition and signs and symptoms and the best treatment and the evidence-based approach. Mm-hmm. You know, so it requires different a different way to think about clinical practice. But it's also important to say that throughout the although in some groups we found this resistance, gradually, throughout the modules, they engage with reflection, especially because they can establish a connection between the topics we are discussing and the patients that they saw in clinical practice.
Mm. And do you think that the fact that the modules run over a period of sort of 10 weeks and then you have the clinical practice and then there's another 10 weeks, that gives them the time to come round to that? Because I was just thinking so some of the ways that I've been trying to think about some of these ideas in a sort of small option module that I'm currently running, but it's kind of run over the course of 2 weeks, so I have some sort of fairly full days with the students, and we're talking about some of the themes, but not to the extent of everything that you've been discussing, because it's an optional module, so the students that come on are kind of open to wanting to think about some of this stuff, which is great. But then I'm missing some of the students on the program who perhaps don't have that, they're not perceiving it to be something that they would want to think about. And I just wondered if, again, thinking about the implementation of it, whether it's helpful to kind of, discuss at the start that this is a process of reflection. It's not the easiest thing, and do you kind of prepare students for that, and then allow them to come round to this change in their way of thinking and their way of kind of being, really, isn't it, as a practitioner over that time span? Is it helpful to have that, do you think?
I think the time is one of the most important conditions for the course.
Because
if you think that we are using a learning transformative framework, well, there are specific stages that are expected in this process of, well, and we are basing our approach in that learning transformative theory. So there are 10 stages that are expected for students to engage with. And this requires time, because it means that students need to, identify their dilemmas, identify their assumptions regarding clinical practice, the hidden aspects of their relationship with patients, how they deal with power. This is very complex, and actually you need time to think about these kind of topics, and also to plan a new way of action. I mean, a new way of relating to your patients, a new way to approach your patients, to ask themselves about their model of practice. Mm-hmm. You have the example of one student there saying, I thought that I was using my psychosocial model, but actually I've realized that I wasn't. So when you are considering the learning theory, I think that the time is very important for providing students with space to reflect on their questions, reflect on the questions that other students ask them, reflect on the questions that tutors ask them, and put it into practice and consider ways of changing their approach to clinical practice. So the time, I think it's quite important. Maybe something that is quite intensive, well, you can inform students about this and say that this is important, but
yes, it's much harder.
That you are expecting something to change, and something that is very complex, I think that you need more time.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
Think this is not intensive, because they have one session. Usually, they have one session per week, so we're talking about 2 hours in a week. Mm. So. We prefer to do this in a longer period, so they have time to reflect, and less intensive plan, so just one session per week.
I was interested in the kind of clinical educator's perspective and perception of this, so whether or not you'd kind of captured that or thought about looking at kind of, is this changing how the students are in practice, and are educators kind of able to see that, and also whether or not, because you highlighted right at the start that this is something which is kind of has been missing from physiotherapy education historically, and so many of the practice educators and kind of more experienced clinicians out there, this may be a bit of a gap for them. So had you kind of provided any additional sort of training or support, integrated this approach kind of into the kind of practice assessment and what educators should be expecting of students to be doing in practice?
Yeah, actually students have some, when they go to clinical settings, usually they carry with them a kind of small book, notebook, with several activities. And for example, one of the activities is write about what you've learned from this patient or from this patient's story. So, and we're not asking them to say that I've learned about, imagine, Parkinson's disease or something like that, because they are expected to have learned about this before. We're expecting them to reflect on what they've learned in terms of their therapeutic relationship, about defining goals together, for example, how they can be more patient focused, for example. So they have some kind of prompts throughout the clinical settings from the health school in order to reflect about these topics, and they are expected to discuss this with their clinical educators. So they also have some material where they are required to reflect on the progress and on the progress related to the learning outcomes for that period. And some of the learning outcomes for that period include, imagine, interview the patient, identify the patient's problems, define goals with the patient. So they are required to reflect on this process and to discuss this with the clinical educators. So I think that this creates a good opportunity to promote dialogue between what students are learning at the health school and how they can connect this with clinical practice, and at the same time having the feedback from the clinical educators. So, and I think that's a strategy to put all of us talking about the same topic and discussing the ideas related to the same topics.
Yeah.
I don't know if I answered your question.
Yes, you did. Yeah. No, I think as you say, and it's kind of how you bring that conversation together, I really like those ideas around, you know, there being some activities really focusing the students' reflection on elements of the collaborative narrative reasoning that you've been talking about. So what have they learnt about themselves, what have they learnt about their role in that process, and how they've approached it, and I think I'm certainly thinking, okay, from my perspective, I think we tend to leave the reflection is very open, so it's kind of, you know, we talk about the importance of it, we talk about the process of reflecting, but I think having those kind of particular prompts and sort of a bit of guidance towards getting students to reflect on certain aspects, I think is again a really helpful thing, because it stops them kind of losing the focus that they've built up, and seeing that as something separate, and then, as you say, having the conversation with the educator and putting them into that, it's putting it on everyone's agenda, isn't it? Right from the start, and I think that's a really nice way to do it. Well, I'm going to say at this point, thank you for what's been a really fascinating conversation. It's one I've been looking forward to for ages, because certainly both myself and Michael had sort of read your articles separately, and then when we were talking about ideas for people who would be interesting to talk to, then we pretty quickly agreed that that we thought there was quite a lot of interesting stuff to get into in this topic, and I think it's definitely proved to be the case. So a really big thank you from our perspective for you taking the time to talk about it, and I think, you know, it's a fascinating topic that has some really, as you say, kind of relatively simple actually ways to implement, and you've really highlighted some of the key aspects to consider for how that can be done most effectively. So I think it's a really useful conversation for anyone thinking about how these topics can be best taught. So thank you for that. Thank you for sharing the stuff in the preparation document, which is going to stay up. People can still access that via either the InBeta community or the website. And once this is out, then we'll obviously put this up as a podcast too. So thank you again.
Pleasure, Ben. My pleasure. Thank you very much. It was lovely to talk to you and the members that from the community that came up to this session, and hope this could be useful for anyone.